The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1 with Elavon Merchant Services. Growing your business is easy peasy with us by your side.
9:29, thank you for your text. I'll get to them in a moment, but I want to say a very good morning to Gabriel Gatehouse. Good morning, Gabriel.
Good morning, Ryan. What a lovely Beatles tune you played just then. I was really enjoying it.
A lot of people have got stuck into the Beatles again since the magnificent Get Back documentary.
Yeah, loved it.
And what was so nice about that, Gabriel, as well, is as I'm a McCartney guy, and the amount of Lennon people have come up and said, okay, I've got to admit, McCartney was pretty good. Yeah.
And what great hair!
Great hair! Wow. I mean, there's a whole podcast waiting to happen of Beatle hair.
How did that happen?
I don't know. From mop top to greasy hobo. It's funny. That's one of the reasons that the attraction of McCartney in that program is because he's the only one with a light behind his eyes half the time. There's a lot of dead-eyed sort of, God help us, stupefied looks. But the hair, the amount of grease would make a chip shop blanche.
I know. I know nothing about the Beatles. I'm sure your listeners don't want to hear me waffle on about them.
Oh, sure. They're used to me doing that for years, for two, so it's enough. Anyway, Gabriel, I'm very happy to talk to you because I really did. I gobbled up The Coming Storm, your podcast.
That's so good to hear. Thanks.
Yeah, I really did. One of my brothers sent it to me and said, I find the best recommendations I get are word of mouth, actually. Is that what you find from people?
Or? Yeah, absolutely. That's the way I get all the best things are word of mouth. Yeah. And actually, what we found with this is that, you know, no amount of promotion, and thank you for plugging my show on your radio show, but actually no amount of promotion gets you listeners the way that just people word of mouth recommending it does.
Yeah, and the reason it's doing well by word of mouth is because you have put it together so well, and you've told quite a complicated story in a most accessible and actually quite dramatic way. I was talking earlier on about I'll just watch the beginning of the next episode of a box set or whatever. With yours, it passed that wonderful test where you say, I'll just listen to the first 5 minutes of the next episode. That good.
Thanks.
Okay, let take us to the genesis of it, Gabriel. Why did you decide QAnon needs to be investigated, researched, and broken down? Talk to me about that.
So I'm a BBC foreign correspondent. I work for Newsnight on BBC Two, and I was covering the 2020 presidential election. So this is before the whole storming of the Capitol and all that. I was in Arizona just after the polls had closed, a couple of days after the polls had closed, and there were some protests, pretty small protests there, of a bunch of Trump supporters who believed that that there was something fishy going on. Mm. And there was this really eye-catching guy there. He had these horns on his head. He was draped in furs. He was bare-chested. His face was painted. And he was sort of yelling and stuff.
Sounds familiar.
Right. Yeah. So I'm a TV journalist. You know, it's a visual medium. I think this guy looks great. So I go over and have a little chat with him. And he's friendly enough, but the story he tells me is pretty crazy, right? So he believes that the election has been stolen by a cabal of satanic pedophiles who are in league with Hillary Clinton and they're trying to unseat Donald Trump. And so I thought, look, this guy looks amazing, but what he's saying is just too niche and too crazy. I can't put him in a news report.
Yeah.
So I made the huge mistake of not interviewing him on camera.
Yeah, I love that. It's a strain throughout your podcast is that you kind of harp back to it a couple of times, going, but I totally understand journalistically why you chose not to, because you don't want to give too much craziness,
Give too much, exactly. Yeah. But then, you know, 2 months later, I'm back in London, I'm watching TV, there's a mob storming the Capitol, and there he is,
the same
guy with the horn. And I was in the newsroom, and I was going to all my colleagues, I was going, that guy, I met him, and now he's there. They were like, oh great, where's the interview that you must have done with him? We can run it now.
Yeah, where's the interview, Cassandra?
Exactly. So I was kind of that kind of journalistic fail, really, that led me down that road. And I started trying to figure out, you know, where did this come from? How did this crazy narrative that you'd think, from my perspective, anyone would see is just too weird to be true, right? I can understand why people have conspiracy theories about John F. Kennedy, who shot John F. Kennedy, you know, maybe that, like, blah, blah, blah. But the idea that there's this vast conspiracy theory involving law enforcement, politicians, the FBI, the judges, electoral officials, journalists, Hollywood, all to try and unseat Donald Trump. It's just, you know, it just, to me, doesn't seem believable, but so so many Americans believe it, right? Millions and millions of them, according to polls.
Yes.
So that was really my mission, was to try and find out where that come from, how it took hold of the American imagination.
Yeah.
And the conclusion I really came to is, don't ignore the weird guy.
Yes, 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 yes. I was intrigued by that analysis, and that's why, you know, even our conversation here starts at the end. The shaman essentially sitting in Mike Pence's chair in the Capitol, and then you say, but how did we get here? How did a guy wearing these skins with his tattoos and his hat and his roaring and yelling, how did any of this happen? So then you bring it right back. And I mean, I'm of an age where I remember I'm 48 years old. So Clinton, I was in college when Clinton got elected. I was all excited that he was kind of our generation's Kennedy almost, you know, young and interesting and played the saxophone and wore Ray-Bans and went on Saturday Night Live and what have you. And he gets into the White House and, you know, then the first big hurdle in some ways was Vince Foster. So remind us who Vince Foster was and how does he fit into this story?
So Vince Foster was an old friend of the Clintons from back in Arkansas.
Yeah.
He was a school friend of Bill's, and he'd worked with Hillary at a law firm in Little Rock. And so when the Clintons went to Washington in 1993, they took some of their old Arkansas buddies with them, and Vince Foster was one of them. He was a lawyer, and he became deputy White House counsel. So he was a very senior lawyer in the Clinton White House. And almost as soon as the Clintons got into the White House, all kinds of little petty scandals started sticking to them. So, not sticking to them, but sort of buzzing around them. And then Vince Foster winds up dead in a park. And almost immediately it's clear that he's shot himself. But the conspiracy machine, the rumor machine, starts going into motion, and the rumors are, the conspiracy theory is, he was murdered. Who had him murdered? Ooh, maybe it was the Clintons. Maybe he knew too much. Too much about what? Well, we don't know, but too much about something. He must have been doing something very big for him to wind up dead. And this is the beginning. Like, it's not true, right? Just to be clear.
Yes, yes.
He committed, investigated, it's pretty clear, committed suicide. But this narrative about he was murdered, and maybe he was murdered by the Clintons, and maybe the Clintons are these kind of murdering duo. That was the beginning of something that later became called the Clinton body count, which then morphed into part of this whole story of evil Hillary and her satanic cabal taking over the world for evil purposes. So we kind of took the Vince Foster story as our ground zero, if you like.
Yes.
We could have gone back further, right? We could have gone back to the satanic panic in the 80s. We could have gone, you know, but you have to take a starting point, and it seemed like a good a place as any to start.
Right. Now I want to go into the dark weeds of the internet, which was starting to become this extraordinary force in people's lives on the planet Earth. And I want you to talk to me about, you know, the virginal wizards. And I want to, you know what I mean? And these, we're getting into the weirdo territory. But like I say, I'm not actually mocking, because you...
No, and that's very important.
I think it is important, because that this was part of your thesis, was that although, yes, they were sort of, a lot of them were basement dwellers, and a lot of them were into, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog and you know, and you know, almost Nazism and weirdness, they suddenly started to acquire this anti-power, or I don't know what you want to call it, Gabriel, but bring us there, please.
So it's QAnon started on this website called 4chan, which is an image board. It's a bit like a social media site, except everything is anonymous, right? So all the posters are anonymous, and you post images, pictures, and text. And this was really the dark underbelly of the internet in the noughties, and by the kind of the teens, if you like, of this century, it was this really dark place where, you know, kids who weren't kids anymore and were still living in their mum's basement were getting into far-right ideology, far-right images, porn, sometimes images of child abuse, like this really dark stuff on this website. But also there was there was this kind of tradition of what's called LARPing. And LARP stands for live action role play. And it started off as a thing in real life where people, you know, like Dungeons and Dragons, I don't know if that rings a bell with some of your listeners, but people would, you know, pretend to be characters from epic heroic characters, and they would dress up and blah, blah, blah in real life, right? But then it moved onto 4chan, and it became this thing where people pretended online to be highly placed insiders. So before there was this conspiracy theory called QAnon, before there was this poster named Q who was saying stuff about this battle against the deep state cabal, there was FBI Anon, there was CIA Anon. So there were all these kinds of people who were pretending to be highly placed insiders in positions of power, revealing the secrets that explain the world. And the people who were consuming this on this website, right, they all kind of know. They kind of know it's a joke, it's a game, but at the same time they're kind of playing along with it, right? And that's where QAnon comes from. But something happens with QAnon whereby it jumps from this very niche website where the users are quite savvy and they know that maybe you don't want to take it too seriously. It jumps onto the mainstream internet. It jumps to YouTube and Facebook and Reddit. And there, out there, there's this whole other bunch of people who don't know that this is, that there's a whole tradition behind this, and they start taking it seriously, and that's where QAnon really begins.
And then you have that extraordinary rhyme and lack of reason with Trump getting elected. Democratically, sorry, you shouldn't be so judgmental on that. Democratically elected, but he's flirting with Q as a phenomenon constantly. You know, do you believe these guys? You know, who think that the whole world is being run by pedophiles and the Clintons are in a Pizza Hut or a pizzeria or somewhere, with their friends doing unspeakable things. And he says, well, you know, they say some good things, and I'm up for protecting kids and stuff like that. So you have this conflation of the most senior politics in the world and the most junior conspiracy theory wacko in the world, and they're now allies.
Yeah, I mean, Trump just has this. I'm almost certain that he didn't know. There were definitely people in Trump's orbit, that this is what we found in our reporting for this series, who were pushing QAnon, both in 2016, it was the kind of the predecessor of QAnon, which is the Pizzagate theory that you just referenced. But in 2020, it was QAnon. There were people who were pushing it because they thought it could help him electorally. I think Trump himself really didn't know what it was, but he's got such a canny instinct for where he might find support that, you know, he doesn't want to alienate these people. And you're right, there was that amazing clip where a reporter asks him, you know, what do you know about this QAnon thing? And he kind of goes, well, I don't know very much about it, but I know they like me very much.
Good people.
And then the reporter goes, well, the theory is that it's this cult of satanic pedophiles who are secretly, that you're helping this, the battle against this cult of satanic pedophiles. Does that sound like something you're into? And he goes, well, I don't know better. That's supposed to be a bad thing.
Oh, Lordy.
So he's very canny, but what is interesting, as you say, is the kind of the linking of these people, this man with huge power, with these kids with no power, right? And that had no power, and what one of the aspects of this that is so interesting. Why did this thing come about? Well, and why did it come out of this place from these people who felt powerless, because they felt they were in their mum's basements as sort of young adults, not just because, you know, they're weirdos or whatever. They were in their mum's basement, a lot of them, because, you know, economically they didn't have any prospects. They maybe couldn't afford to move out. You know, the world is changing. The kind of economic stability that their parents might have enjoyed and they might have expected simply doesn't exist anymore. You know, they can get, maybe they can survive with 2 or 3 0-hour contract gig economy jobs. You know, so these people are feeling powerless, and this whole idea of LARPing as a person in a position of power, that's a role play game. They're role playing powerful people because they have no power, and then suddenly their the little story that they made up gets yoked to this incredibly powerful force.
Extraordinary.
And that's kind of what happened.
And Trump, you know, to his credit, as you say, a canny operator, sees this socio-psychological zeitgeist and says, yeah, okay, they're part of my tribe. I'll mind you, I'll lead you to the promised land. Even if you are dressing up as real people, we'll LARP all the way to Capitol Hill. And we should just explain, of course, that QAnon was allegedly sending messages from essentially the Oval Office or the corridors of power. And those messages dried up then, and whoever was posting them, and I think you got pretty much close to who it was in the end a couple of times, disappeared. Because the whole thing, I mean, this is like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain. There's a twit, yeah. There's a twit there pulling levers.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't us who kind of discovered who it most likely was posting as Q. There were a few other journalists who sort of did the work, most of the work on that before we got there. But it turned out that at least certainly most people think that it was this father and son duo called the Watkinses, Americans who were living in the Philippines, who eventually acquired this website where Q, this figure of Q, was posting. Most people who looked into this believe that they were controlling the Q account, as it were. Mm. And you're right, they stopped posting after the election in 2020. But the movement itself has sort of has had a second life. So it's kind of moved on from just being about the sort of cabal of satanic pedophiles and Hillary Clinton, and it's kind of linked up with the election was stolen, which is, you know, yes, Donald Trump's rallying cry and continues to be. You know, he's still holding rallies saying that. And you know, now in the Republican Party in America, it's hard to say that you don't believe the election was stolen if you want to have any future in the party, even if you don't believe it, right? Yeah. Because you would have to believe that they somehow stole 8 million votes.
Yeah.
Right, that's a lot of votes to steal. That's
because they're scared. They're tethered to the Trumpian goat. I mean, they're scared out of their wits to lose votes if they go against the.
Some people are scared of Trump. Yeah, we spoke to people who said, I spoke to this one guy who's a sort of Republican old boy from South Carolina, who was one of the few who said to me, "Of course, I don't believe that the election was stolen. I mean, how do you steal 8 million votes?" But he said, "I've never seen such fear in people." Yeah. Like, I've never seen such devotion to Donald Trump, and I've never seen such fear. So the question is, like, what happens now to American politics, where you have, you know, there are only two parties in America, and one of them doesn't believe in the integrity of the electoral system anymore. Mm. Mm. And how do you come back from that?
I don't know. And even in the reports last week are saying that Hillary Clinton is sniffing around for maybe another look at this. People close to her saying we could have a complete rerun of the 2016.
Can you imagine that?
Can you, Gabriel? This is your job in foreign affairs. Can you believe such a prospect, or has the world gone so Alice in Wonderland that we can't say no to such an option?
I mean, you're right. The world has gone pretty crazy in the past 5 years. I mean, I would think it would be folly. It would be such folly to rerun the 2016 election of Trump versus Clinton. Yeah. It would just be such madness.
When did history ever get in the way of folly?
But, well, exactly. And when did powerful people's egos ever get in the way of folly?
Correct.
So, never say never.
One other observation, I'm kind of running out of time. I could speak to you for another hour and a half, but one other observation was how, you know, Michael Flynn, the former army guy, was. He's kind of the de facto leader of this nebulous QAnon phenomenon, going to the rallies and so forth. So they now have a sort of a human manifestation of the online idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because these conspiracy theory communities, they're quite febrile, and they move quite fast, and they turn on each other, and they have schisms and splits. So actually, since we spoke to him, Mike Flynn fell foul of a group of QAnon conspiracy theorists because he led some prayer somewhere that they thought was an incantation to the devil or something. So I think he I'm not sure how much of a leader he still is for the QAnon community, if you can even call it one thing. It's a, QAnon is basically a it's a spectrum, right? It's a spectrum at one end where you're like, oh, there's something dodgy about the 2020 election. And at the other end, it's they're eating babies and drinking blood. And there's this kind of, there's everything in between. And Mike Flynn, Mike Flynn is one of the very colourful characters, General Mike Flynn, who sort of inhabits that spectrum.
Yeah, it's a fascinating. I'm so glad to talk to you this morning, Gabriel, and we'll talk again.
It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, likewise. I look forward to your podcast on beetle hair, but that's for another few months. I'm sure it took you a while to put that together. Gabriel Gatehouse, congratulations on your podcast, and we'll talk again. I hope soon. Best of luck with everything.
Thanks so much.
Not at all. Ryan. Gabriel Gatehouse joining us live from London. The program is called, the podcast is called The Coming Storm. It comes from BBC Radio 4, as Gabriel was saying. He's the BBC Newsnight's foreign correspondent. But I hope you found that as fascinating as I did. That podcast is a knockout. All right, we've got Eurovision song to play. We'll do it after this.